Hello, welcome to the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Matt Oper.
What's up?
And the returning Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Good. I'm still alive, which is kind of surprising. But yeah, glad to be back. What are we talking about again? What is this podcast about?
Knitting. It's about knitting.
Oh, I'm in the wrong podcast.
We brought this up to each other, but we've both taken up needlepoint. A very vulgar needlepoint. So it's like mainly swear words.
Okay.
It's really interesting. You should try it.
I should. I mean, I'm still like, I'm still just kind of focusing on pudding podcasts. I mean, like ways to make pudding and whether or not the skin on the pudding is better than pudding without skin on it. But I haven't really upgraded myself to the swear words knitting. Damn, you guys have advanced yourselves since I was last on.
Yeah. Onward and upward, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, and then next stop an actual... Yeah, and then next stop an actual podcast about Cincinnati Bearcats athletics. I mean, we'll get there. I mean, 3 years in, let's baby step it up there. Not there yet, but we're getting there.
One small step at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we can jump right in. Since spring practice has begun, I guess summer practice, since it's August. It's the last practice before the season starts. Has your level of excitement for this season changed as the calendar has changed? Or are you still... in wait and see mode with this whole first year under Luke Fickell thing.
Yeah, was that a question for Matt or me?
Well, you haven't been here for a while, so you take it.
Oh, okay. Yes and no. I don't know. My opinion on Fickell is that he's obviously killing it on the recruiting trail. The guy can bring talent into the program. From a coaching perspective, we're kind of still in a wait and see mode, right? Like, I think he got a bad rub when he was at Ohio State and he had to take over after Sweater Vest got canned. You know, 3 months before the season, he finished under 500. They were kind of underperforming from an Ohio State perspective. But there was a lot of good signs from that season. I think they, like, four of their six or seven losses were, like, by a touchdown or less. They beat a couple of ranked teams. They still lost to a couple of ranked teams. So, and again, I mean, he had to take over for Tressel 3 months before the season started. So everything was stacked against him, and he still put together a decent season for Ohio State against a tough schedule.
With a really young team, that's the other key part of
it. With a really young team, yeah. And they did fine. And I think people are kind of holding that against him, saying, oh, God, in his only chance as a head coach, the guy absolutely got steamrolled in his first season, basically tanked the program. But there's so many other factors going on there. Whether or not he can actually, you know, take the reins of UC, and I mean, from a coordinator standpoint, I think he's brought in the right guys. It seems like it, at least from a recruiting standpoint. But again, from a coaching standpoint, TBD. I'm excited, but I'm also kind of cautiously optimistic. I hate to say that, you know, I've been burned before by being optimistic about a head coach, but then the Tommy Tuberville thing happened, and we all know how that goes. So I don't know. He's not necessarily, like, you know, guilty until proven innocent, but TBD.
Yeah, and you brought up the coordinators, and I think that's really the most interesting part about how this month and the first parts of the season are going to unfold, because when you got a coach like Fickell, who is basically a blank slate, I mean, he had the 1 year at Iowa State, but like you said, extremely trying circumstances. It wasn't expected. He wasn't really given a chance to prepare. So it looked like the team was unprepared and not led particularly well, because I mean, it wasn't. He wasn't expecting that job. He wasn't expecting to be put in that position. But I think it says a lot about him and how he's regarded in the community of coaches that when Urban Meyer came in, he did not clean house. He kept him around. Mm-hmm. You know, Ohio State fans have had their issues with Fickell in terms of how he ran the defense. But I really, like, he has a national championship under his belt. I don't really see what you can complain about given that. There's not a lot of coordinators who have that on their resume, and he is one of them. The more interesting thing to me is his choices and who he brought in as his coordinators, because, yeah, coaching is like anything else. The better you get at something, you get a new job, and you do less of the thing you're good at. So you have to hire people to do what you used to do. So he hired Marcus Freeman to run the defense. He's one of the youngest coordinators in college football. He is well-regarded in coaching circles and has a bright future, but he's not really run a defense before. He ran Purdue's defense last year, and Purdue is one of the worst teams in college football. Not that that is on his head, but that is just, it's just a fact. That's where he came from. That's what he did. I'm cautiously optimistic about the defense because I think there's a lot of talent there, and Freeman will be able to find interesting ways to take advantage of, you know, the strengths that this team has. Namely, they have a really good defensive line, they have pretty good cornerbacks, and the linebackers are serviceable. With those factors, you can create a good defense, and I think this team is going to rely on their defense for this entire season because the offense is such an unknown quantity. And it's not just unknown because the offensive line is basically turned over completely. We don't know who the quarterback is. We don't really know what the system is. We don't know what the overriding philosophy is going to be. Like, all of that will be hashed out over the course of this year by Mike Denbrock. And, you know, I was, in preparation for this podcast, I reread Bill Connelly's piece on the Bearcats in terms of how he was previewing the season. And I think he made a really good point about Denbrock being, like, he's tasked with coming in and creating a culture and a fit and a feel to the offense. And that's not something that he has really shown in the past that he can do. Like, we don't know what a Mike Denbrock offense is. We just don't. You know, he was an offensive coordinator at Notre Dame, but, you know, Brian Kelly calls the plays. As forever. Even if he said he didn't call the plays, he's very involved in game planning to an extent that most head coaches really aren't anymore. So what is his idea of what an offense is? You know, how does he take advantage of, you know, the talent that he has on hand on this team? What's his approach to doing that? I mean, that's a big question. And I think, you know, for the early parts of this year, they're going to ride the defense because the offense is going to be such an unknown.
Yeah, and to your point about the coordinators, they're kind of unknown quantities or commodities, just like Fickell. Freeman, I'm a little less concerned about in the fact that I think Fickell will probably have his hands all over it. I mean, whatever decisions Freeman makes will probably have to get greenlit by Fickell. I mean, I don't know how much of a leash Freeman has, but I got to figure that the defense will pretty much go in line with whatever Fickell's vision is on a day-to-day, game-to-game, play-to-play basis. Denbrock, I'm glad you brought up the Connelly piece. I was a little, I definitely respect Bill Connelly. I mean, the guy pours over his numbers to come up with great previews that are very in-depth, more in-depth than any other preview out there. I find that Connelly was a little overcritical about Denbrock's role, and you kind of brought that up. The fact that, you know, he's never really ran the show at Notre Dame, but, I mean, how much of that is Denbrock and how much of that is Brian Kelly, the control freak? I mean, you don't really know what factors are going on there. He's also a little concerned about Denbrock's ability to really bring an, you know, quote-unquote up-tempo spread offense to Cincinnati. But, I mean, how many coaches across – how many offensive coordinators or offensive-minded coaches across college football promise an up-tempo spread offense? I mean, that's just coach speak, isn't it? I mean, that's just bulletin board material. Who knows what the offense is going to bring? Who really cares if it's going to be up-tempo and spread and et cetera if they're putting up 35, 42 points a game? or they're winning games 28-21 or 21-17. I mean, like you said, the defense is going to carry the team. I don't really know what to make of either of the coordinators, but I'm, again, like Fickell, I'm optimistic about the bringing.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way you guys do, like, about Denbrock. I'm kind of, like, unsure of exactly what he's going to bring. It's like the pace thing, like, last year they talked about that a lot, at least Tuberville did, and then they were slower than UC's been in, like, ages. Like, and it's like you mentioned, Chris, like, coach speak is up-tempo, we're going to play fast, attack, like, all that garbage. And, like, that's exactly what Fickell said when he took over. But, like, if you work better if you just run the ball, and, like, Mike Boone bounces back to what he was, like, his first two seasons, then, like, maybe you play slower, and you're the odd team in the league that's not Navy. It's like, you know, every other team, and, like, especially in their division, like, all the good teams are going to play pretty fast. At least USF. I forgot who was in their division, and, like, it's all slow teams. But, like, if, like, you got, like, your USFs and, like, your SMUs that play really fast, and, like, if you play somewhere in the middle, I think you could throw enough teams off, especially if your offense succeeds. Like, he's got a pretty big issue to go through just by picking a quarterback. That's going to be a season-defining quarterback battle right there. And if you make the wrong decision with your quarterback, we saw last year, it pretty much tanked the season when they couldn't find a quarterback that could play every game, be it injuries or ineffectiveness or Tommy Tuberville being a weirdo.
Put very lightly, yeah. I mean, I just think I'm encouraged by some of the decisions they've started to make. It sounds like they're going to give Mike Boone the rock at least like 80-90% of the time. He's going to be the guy. They're not going to be farting around with the running backs. They're not going to be farting around with the quarterbacks. They're going to pick a guy, the better guy among the position group, and ride him, you know, for better or worse. Maybe Mike Boone doesn't pass protect as well as the guy behind him, but he's the best running back on the team, and they're not going to be farting around with whether or not he has certain weaknesses and just ride his strengths. And I appreciate that decision making. And that's the kind of personnel moves that, I mean, I can definitely back. And it's kind of the stuff we've been screaming about last season or last couple of seasons in the Tuberville area, particularly with Boone. There's still, I mean, a lot of question marks on the team. Yeah, quarterback, offensive line, not so much defensively. I mean, there's some, like a linebacker. I mean, they're definitely light there. But initially, signs are pretty good that they're making the right decisions from a personnel standpoint. And we'll just have to see kind of as the season goes on if they actually like can coach this team.
Yeah, I think the offensive line is far more important than who ends up being the quarterback. I'll be honest. Because
absolutely.
The last 3 years, the offensive line has been, I'm trying to be polite, dreadful, I guess would be the nicest way to say it.
Dog shit. I'll be a little meaner.
Okay. I mean, basically for 3 years, we've had running backs who run into the line and then fall down. And the line doesn't go forward. They just run to the line of scrimmage and fall down. I know statistically people have gained yards. It seems like an anomaly because I don't remember any of them. But, I mean, they brought in Ron Crook, who was at West Virginia for the last, I think, 3 or 4 years. It's a really interesting hire because, you know, Fickell's a guy who comes from a power spread background, right? Because even before Urban Meyer got there, you know, Tressel embraced the spread with Terrell Pryor and basically went to a similar version to what Urban Meyer is known for, which is the power spread. And when Fickell gets the chance to, you know, hire his offensive staff, he brings in Denbrock, a guy who is spread, but there's really, he seems to be more an amalgamation of a lot of different styles than he is, you know, an acolyte of one particular school. And then he brings in a guy like Crook, who has basically come from an air raid background. And Holgorsen has really changed up how he has gone about deploying his offense because the kind of athletes that you can get at West Virginia is just different from what you can get if you're recruiting the state of Texas like he was at his previous job at Oklahoma State. So there are a very, you know, they're not like a run-centric team, but they run quite a bit. They don't do power. It's almost all zone. And the big question is, how is that going to mesh with, A, the offensive line talent that they have in there? Because they're completely turning over on that side. The only person who's coming back with anything resembling a lot of experience is Corey Cunningham at tackle. Everybody else is turning over. I mean, there's guys who played last year, but there's not a lot of experience. I mean, if you look at the experience chart for the offensive line, it's not ideal. So they're basically starting over from that position, and you know how they go about crafting an offensive line that is capable of getting consistent movement up front in the run game is going to be critical, because that is, for anything else to work for this offense, for the quarterbacks to be given a chance to succeed, whoever it is, the offensive line has to be able to, you know, give the running back 4 or 5 yards every play. That hasn't happened for years here. And I think in a lot of ways, Tuberville recruited very well, especially on the defensive side of the ball with the defensive line. I mean, this staff is walking into a tremendous defensive line in terms of talent. Maybe not production last year because they were still very, very young, but the talent's there. The offensive line is a completely different story. Like, they had to go JUCO route so frequently that they didn't really get a chance to develop their high school recruits. And this staff is probably the one that's going to end up paying that bill.
Just to touch on UC's run game last year, it wasn't just bad. It was one of the, 15 or 20 worst rush attacks in the country last season. They were 112 on the big rushing statistics on the S&P Plus. Just pretty bad.
It was the worst running game since the S&P Plus analytics system has been around, and that's been a dozen years now.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of that is the talent on the offensive line. A lot of that is the coaching. I got to figure the fact that they have the best running back on the team playing running back and taking most of the reps next season will go a long way to improve those numbers. I mean, there's a lot more to that than just putting Mike Boone in the position that he should be playing on this team, which is starting running back and only taking him off when he's tired. But the fact that he's at least there, that at least gives me a little encouragement that they're going to at least improve those numbers. But to your point, the offensive line is going to be dreadful next season. I mean, it's going to take a couple of seasons to really get that thing turned around.
Yeah, it's going to be a work in progress, which is why I think they're going to have to lean so heavily on the defense for these first couple of years, because it's just... Yeah, I like they can get perfectly average play out of the quarterback position. I'm not worried about that. I mean, Hayden Moore is average. Ross Traill has a higher ceiling. Hayden Moore is he can be an average, serviceable quarterback. I have no issues with that. The question there is whether you want to go for the higher ceiling or the lower floor. Like, what's your preference? I really don't. Know where their mentality is at that. I mean, if they really want to tear this thing down and go the year zero route and just kind of get all the young guys reps, get everybody who's going to be around for the next 3-4 years reps now, so that they, you know, so that that pays dividends next year and the year after that, when those guys who were so young this year start to mature and become better players.
Yeah, and to that point, who's going to be starting at quarterback? Gun to your head right now, the facts in front of you, who's starting game one?
I think it's Traill.
Both of you.
I think they go Traill because it's just, it makes more sense for a new regime to start over with their guy, quote unquote.
I kind of think it's going to be Moore, although I want it to be Traill. It sounds like they both they're both kind of on even ground right now. And like if they like fall in love with Moore's arm, which it sounds like this coaching staff did last year as well, I think he'll get another shot. But if he's as turnover prone as he's been in his UC career, I think he loses the job.
Yeah, I kind of follow that same mindset, Scott. I mean, I want it to be Trail. I hope it's Trail. I feel like Trail is the better choice long term, but I feel like the staff is going to go with Moore. Trail's got the better arm. He's got the better upside. To your point, Matt, I don't know why, but I feel like they're just going to lean on Moore. But they made the right personnel decisions up until now. Who knows what they're going to do by the end of August? I hope it's Trail, though.
I think if they're going to play more up tempo, it should be Trail. Although we've seen like more like flash, like the Memphis game is what everybody jumps to. But I think if you're going to play up tempo, I think Trail brings a lot more to the table than Moore does.
Yeah, and that's what pisses me off about people who defend Hayden Moore. I mean, he's a good person. He's a solid athlete. He had a good game. He had one good game against Memphis where it was a shootout anyways and no one was playing defense. And he was just awful after that. And then people point to Hayden Moore or Ross Trail and say, well, look at his numbers, 1-6. Well, I'm pretty sure two of those picks came against Houston when Tommy Tuberville threw him in against garbage time when the Houston defense had their ears pinned back and were rushing the quarterback nonstop. Hayden Moore could not throw the ball more than 40 yards if he had a jetpack attached to the football. I mean, maybe he's improved his strength and conditioning this year. I mean, looking at the numbers, it looks like they actually have a strength and conditioning program and they're making players actually go through the process. But Ross Trail is just the right decision long term. Like, if this staff wants to, I mean, I know that Fickell wants to win as many games as he possible can. I mean, he's a coach. I mean, that's what he wants to do. They've got to know in the back of their mind that 2017 is going to be kind of rough. They're going to be working their tails off to get to 7 or 8 wins. I would rather they do that with a Ross Trail and build up that experience for a strong 2018 than go with Hayden Moore, who's going to fizzle out by the end of the year, and then they're going to have to go to Ross Trail anyways.
Yeah, and some of the comments that Fickell has made in, you know, the post-practice media scrum so far in camp, I mean, we're only a weekend, but he has brought up the point repeatedly that basically, if you're good enough, you're old enough. So, like, there's going to be a lot of freshmen who play this year. Freshmen and redshirts. If you're going to embrace the youth movement to that extent, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to go with a guy like Moore, knowing that if you need him, he is there, and he will be, like I said, a perfectly average quarterback for you. But long-term, and this staff is going to be around at least 3 years, right?
Yeah, for better or worse, yeah.
you need to get Trail the experience, because I think he's hands down the best prospect that they have. And I really like Ben Bryant, the quarterback that they have committed. I mean, I know we don't do recruiting a whole lot, but I really like Ben Bryant, the quarterback that they have committed for this class. He's going to be the future, but you need a bridge to there. And I think Trail is a much better option as that. And that doesn't mean that he can't become a star in his own right. But I think if you're planning for 2-3 years down the road, Trail is just the play. It just is.
Yeah. And to your point, not to dive into the recruiting at all, I mean, Ben Bryant looks like a hell of a quarterback. A steal that UC is basically just grabbing from Wisconsin, because Wisconsin has very stupid standards for their recruiting practices, but we don't need to get into that either. But you're right. I mean, to bridge the gap, I would rather go with a guy who's a redshirt sophomore. He takes his lump this season, continues to progress, becomes an upperclassman next year, have Ben Bryant learn from him as a redshirt freshman, then you bring in Trail in 2019 as a senior, put Ben Bryant behind him as a redshirt freshman, as a redshirt freshman in 2019 as a backup, and then turn the reins over when Trail graduates after that season, whether or not this coaching staff is here or not. That just seems like the more logical, smoother transition if we're talking about this program, not even just 3 years down the road, but I mean like 5, 6, 7, 8 years down the road.
And like on top of that, like most of your receivers are pretty young, besides I guess Devin Gray is the like longest tenured receiver. I think he's the only senior at top of the depth charts. And most of your running backs behind Boone are young. So like there will be something to like the offensive continuity next season. And everybody says continuity is so huge in college football. So that would be like a nice little boost for the offense going into next year, hypothetically.
Yeah, and continuity generally matters more in the passing game than it does in the running game. Having receivers with experience, it just makes everything easier. Because
right.
These days, the way the position is played, it's such a complicated position because long gone are the days where defense will show you what they're going to run, line up in it, and just run it. Everybody disguises coverage. Everybody tries to, you know, feint that they're going to run a cover three when really it's a cover four or a cover two or whatever. So receivers have to basically read the defense on the fly and just find the vacant zone. And they have to basically telepathically communicate with the quarterback, hey, we're both going to go here, right? We both see this green space here. That is very hard to do for freshmen. We saw that last year because a lot of freshmen played last year as well. And a lot of new guys played. And really only Devin Gray had a good year. I mean, Khalil Lewis was dynamite down the stretch, but he didn't have a great early year. So I just think having more guys with more experience with the same quarterback is just going to be crucial for next year. And it's, you just kind of have to build that continuity this year. And I think it's not going to help anybody, the receivers or the quarterbacks, to do what Tuberville did last year and just kind of flip a coin and say, oh, yeah, today it's you. And then if you have a good practice, it'll still be you. But if you have a bad one, it's not going to be you. And then if you have like a really bad play, it's not going to be you. Like, that doesn't help anybody. That's not good for the development of anybody ever. Regardless of, like, we're not even talking about football. Like, that is terrible for people in life.
It seemed like half of Trail's appearances, he would throw a pick or two. In most cases, he would throw two picks, and then he'd be on the bench, which definitely didn't seem to help his growth last year, especially in the games he ended up starting, which I think were Miami and USF, if I'm correct. So I know he got pulled from the USF game, for sure.
Yeah, those were the two we started.
And, like, either way, like, if, like, you have your quarterback go down with injury, like we've seen every year since, like, 1934, you have an experienced backup in Trail or Moore. And I think whatever the hot quarterback is, like, if Moore starts, then goes down after a couple games, and Trail comes in and is awesome, I think they just start Trail. I don't think they go back.
No. And you brought it up, but we are going on 11 straight years with a quarterback who cannot make it through a season without getting injured. So, playing the numbers, both these guys are going to play. Because it's a UC quarterback. Something will happen.
And fair or not, Moore missed like almost half the season last year with his foot injury.
Yeah. So, it's really, like, both of them will play. The question is, what are you trying to accomplish with the quarterback position this year? Are you building for the future, or are you just trying to capitalize, you know, get a couple wins and build your stock and move on from there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess to play devil's advocate, maybe a lot of the problems with Hayden Moore was due to the coaching staff. I mean, just the fact that, I mean, one of my biggest concerns is arm strength, and the guy will probably be stronger this year. His decision-making was awful, I guess. He's smaller than Ross Trail. He's got, like you said, Matt, he's got a lower ceiling. Maybe it works out okay. I mean, maybe the defense is fine, but long-term, this staff has to think long-term. And if you're thinking about where this program can be 2018, 2019, you got to ride Ross Trail. There's too much talent there that can be cultivated more so than Hayden Moore.
Yeah, and the bigger, well, it's not the bigger question. It's a matter of leadership and confidence. I mean, the biggest problem with last year's team was there was a lack of buy-in. Nobody really believed what the coaches were saying. It was a team where it was so obvious that the coaches and the players were not on the same page. It seemed obvious that the coaches and the coaches were not on the same page. And that just kind of infected everything. Like, if you can't get that basic aspect of your football program right, it doesn't matter what your tactics are. It doesn't matter what talent you have on the floor, you know, on the field. It is just not going to work out if you don't have that simple level of buy-in. And by all accounts, both quarterbacks have really bought into what the expectations are going to be for them this year and going forward. So if that aspect of it is even, then, yeah, like I've said this for years while we've been doing this podcast, if all other factors are equal, I'm always in favor of playing the young guy just because you get more time with them, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I don't think there's a clearer example of that than this.
Right, it's different if we're talking about this is year five under Tuberville. Like if for whatever the plans align to the guy somehow talks his way into staying at UC one more season, I guess you give it to Hayden Moore. Who the hell knows at that point? That's a nightmare scenario. I don't even want to go down. But year one of a staff with a young, talented, I mean, former four-star quarterback with some SEC offers, you got to go with that guy. You got to put confidence in him that he's going to be the guy long-term. And even if he has Hayden Moore at his back for the next two seasons, you got to put confidence in that guy. All that being said, still worried that it's going to be Hayden Moore leading the team out in game one with the first string. I have that funny feeling. Maybe I'm just jaded by the Tuberville era where it was just like a toss-up and flipping of a coin of who the hell was going to be quarterback any given play. That's the feeling in the back of my head. It's going to be Moore. I want it to be Trail, but it's going to be Moore, and I'm going to hate myself for it.
Yeah, I'm actually in the same boat you are with the Tuberville juggling quarterbacks like bullshit. Because like they're both going to play against Austin Peay, no doubt. It kind of doesn't matter who starts. So I kind of think they'll do the thing where like one guy gets a series with the first group and all that nonsense. Like then the Michigan game is like the really big one. It's like if they start Trail for Michigan, like you got to think he's starting the rest of the season. If they start more against Michigan, maybe it's like a case that we just saw with USC last year where they started their more experienced quarterback against Alabama when they knew they were going to take a loss. And then they played Darnold like the rest of the year. Like I think we could see a situation kind of like that. Especially if like they start more like the first couple games and UC is like 2-2 and they make the switch going into like Marshall.
Yeah, we're overthinking it.
Are we?
I don't, like, I would like to think that Fickell has learned the lessons of the JT Barrett-Cardale Jones saga. Like, this is a much smaller version of that, where you had two guys who can both effectively do the job, with vastly different skill sets, right? And like the biggest lesson of that year is that basically Ohio State pissed away another chance at a national title because they couldn't figure out this one crucial aspect of the team. They couldn't get the most important position right. They couldn't just pick a guy. And it really sabotaged what should have been a very promising season for them. And then ended up being just kind of, by recent Urban Meyer Ohio State standards, a disaster. They lost two games. It was really bad. Yeah, I think my hope would be that Fickell would pick up the lesson from that and just say that once you have your guy, you have your guy. And it's just easier and better for everyone in your program to not go back on that decision and to just live with it.
Well, that being said, what do you guys think the goals are for this season? Is it like winning the division? Is it just making a bowl game? Or is it just being like much better prepared than they were last season? It's like, as you said, Matt, like they started from the jump last year like garbage. Like, no offense to last year's team. Like, that game against UT Martin was close into the fourth quarter. Like, the Purdue game was terrible. And then, like, the losing started when they got killed by Houston. So, like, what are realistic goals for this season in your guys' eyes?
I think a bowl game is absolutely a realistic goal for this team. So much of the problem with last year's team was just the lack of leadership from the head coach's office. And like, it sounds like you're scapegoating Tuberville by saying that, but like everything flows from that office, right? If his attitude is, I'm just here to get another check, I don't really care about it, I'm half retired, and that by all accounts that was his attitude, that's going to filter back to your team. And it did. It was obvious. Like, it didn't seem like these guys cared. There was no buy-in to anything the coaches were saying. They brought in a whole new offensive staff. I don't even know if anybody listened to them. I mean, obviously they went to meetings. They did what they were supposed to do. But, like, that message never went to heart. It seems like they have gotten complete buy-in from the players, this new staff. And, like, this is not a team that is bereft of talent. There is a lot of talent on this team. Like, you have 3-4 guys on the defensive line who probably will get a shot to play in the NFL. Cortez Broughton for sure is going to be a draft pick. You have a lot of talent in the secondary. Even with the dismissal of Alex Downs, you have a ton of talent there. You have two very, very good receivers in Khalil Lewis and Devin Gray who both will get a shot to play at the next level. Mike Boone is a phenomenal athlete and a phenomenal talent who just has been wasted for basically a year. Like, this is not a team that is, like, this isn't UConn post Pasqualoni, right? It's not that level of dysfunction and you know, just not having the players there. Like, the players are there. They just didn't, it just didn't work with the last coaching staff. Like, there are so many examples of new regimes coming into old teams that have, you know, that are underrated because they underperformed under previous regimes, and everyone just assumes that's going to continue. I think the talent on this team is better than a lot of people are expecting. I think they were picked probably, what, 7th out of 14 AAC teams, something like that? Yes. They have more talent than a lot of the teams above them.
Right. I mean, you listen to Hayden Moore's comments a couple of weeks ago. I mean, just throwing so much shade at the previous staff. They didn't seem like that they were holding players accountable. The players didn't really care. They were exhausted at the end of games. They just didn't, like, no one wanted to be there. And that all stems from Tommy Tuberville. And to your point, Matt, I mean, the buck stops at him, whether or not his coordinators are getting on the players. I mean, he's got to get on the coordinators for getting on the players. Fickell is so inundated with his hands in every little aspect of this program right now. I mean, I got to believe at the very minimum, they're going to try for 60 minutes. They're going to give it their all. They're going to make changes. They're going to actively work every single play to win that play and then win that series and then win that quarter and then win the game. And that's the kind of attitude that I can appreciate from a coaching staff. You're right. The talent is there. I just think there's going to be a lot of there's going to be some growing pains, especially with the way this conference is made up. I mean, Houston, USF, Navy, all strong teams. There's teams in the AAC that are better, just flat out better than UC right now, just because of the turnover on the coaching staff over here. A bowl game is definitely a realistic goal. Anything better than 6 wins, I'm happy with.
Yeah, and I think like the parallel we need to look at is UCF last year, in year one of the Scott Frost era.
Right.
Nobody expected anything from that team because UCF, they were as bad as UC was last year. The Knights were way worse than that in the last year of the league. Like, way worse. It was not that bad, and that team got to, what were they, 6-6 and made a bowl game? Purely on the strength of the defense. The offense was dreadful. But just based on their defense and just a basic level of buy-in from their players to what the staff was teaching them, got them to that point. And the buy-in is there. I mean, it is in all the interviews you see on, you know, the post game on the on YouTube videos, all this stuff, like you can tell how much this group of players wanted to be coached like this. Like desperately wanted it. And now that they actually have it, I think they're gonna see, you know, what their potential really is. Now I'm not predicting a division title or or anything like that, but I just don't think this team is as bad as the media projections have them out to be, right? They might not win the division. They're probably not going to win the division. But, you know, if they're going to make a bowl, I wouldn't be shocked to see 8 wins.
I'd be a little surprised if they won 8 games. I think like 7 is really doable. Because like, I think at the same point, like, I'm buying in with the optimism. Like, then, like, you have to just still look at, like, the offense, the way the offense performed last season. Like, I don't think you can just, like, look at how they went down the stretch, like, taking out the Tulsa game. Like, oh, this is the offense that's ready to shine. And they scored, like, 2 touchdowns in 4 games. Like, that, like, most of that offense is still coming back. And, like, some of the guys who were the top performers are gone. Like, so I think there's a little bit of worry with the offense, especially when you get some of like the more tricky games on the road. Like Michigan, they'll probably definitely lose to Michigan. Like Miami University was like a toss-up last year, and they go to Oxford where they haven't played well, it seems like forever. And they go to Navy, and they go to South Florida and Tulane, who, Tulane's like not very good, but they're funky. And, like, East Carolina, they've seemed to handle the past few years. It's like, I think, like, there is a chance just with how up and down the offense was, mainly down last year. Like, if they can't bounce back all the way up to, like, the levels most people expect, I think it could be kind of a frustrating year. But even if it's frustrating, I don't think it'll be, like, the wasteland last season where you get, like, halfway through the regular season and people are ready to like everybody to get fired in October. Like that definitely shouldn't happen this year.
Right. And my biggest concern right now is just the lack of depth. I mean, linebacker, offensive line, you got to figure at least the players that are out there are going to be better conditioned than what they've been the last few years. But I mean, once the injury bug starts to happen and I mean, just, if the game starts to go into overtime, if it's just a tooth and nail tough game, that's my concern. Where some of those losses are going to start piling up. I think they can out talent a lot of the teams in the league, like a UConn, like a Tulane, even though they got that funky offense now. It's just those late game situations that they're just not going to be there yet, and that's just kind of my concern. Those are the growing pains, essentially, we just have to get over.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I'm not expecting 8 wins. What I mean by saying that, you know, I wouldn't be shocked by it is, you know, they're projected to be a top 50 defense, right, and a top 90 offense. If they end up being a top 40 defense and a top 70 offense in this league, that can get you to 8 wins. You know, East Carolina, Connecticut, like they, and this is the other benefit of it. They are in the worst division of the two. Like, they're in the division you want to be in, just because you get to play UConn and East Carolina every year. It's kind of where you want to be. Temple is an unknown, to say the least. I mean, they have been great, but rules gone. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how Jeff Collins does there. They're, you know, we all know their historic issue has been just an offense of any sort. It's really interesting how this league breaks down into the offense fund division and the defense division.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's USF, who's their own thing. But, yeah, like, all the defense first teams are in this division. And as a defense first team, that kind of gives you a shot to win games you probably shouldn't win.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, like, most of the offenses in the division are projected to be average outside of USF. So I think you're in for a good, like, if they could, like, pull out 8 wins, like, kind of, not, like, easily. But, like, is there that dramatic a difference between, like, Cincinnati and Temple? Like, no. Like, they should be better than East Carolina and UConn. And if they're better than USF or UCF, who they play at home, that's 4 wins just in your division. So, like, the rest is definitely doable, especially when you have a gimme win to start the year. Then you're looking at only 3 wins out of your road games, which, like, everybody thinks they can win. And then you have Marshall, who's terrible. So that's 6 wins right there if you just take care of, like, the bottom teams in your division and the 2 home games that you should definitely win, your 2 bye games.
Yeah, and they miss Houston and they miss Tulsa. Like, this is a manageable schedule for a first-year head coach. First-year staff.
Especially if they get, like, the bounce of playing, like, more, I don't want to say passionately, but, like, that first year.
Passion is 100% the word. They, like, just giving a shit.
Not even, like, passion or giving a shit, just, like, being alive out there. Just having a presence on the football field. That's all they need.
Yeah, 'cause stuff like that goes a long way. Like, we see it every year. With all these upstarts, like UCF last season. Like, they were garbage the year before. They didn't win a game. And then last year, they won 6 games and were, like, really good on defense. Like, just using that as a barometer, you have put yourself in position to challenge for the division. And, like, Temple won the division last year. So, I mean, like, it's not like there's, like, some giant difference between how good USF was than everybody else. Even though everybody thinks they're going to be really good and they have a good coach.
Yeah, I mean, USF is going to run away with this division. I mean, if that doesn't happen, that's going to be one of the more shocking things in the group of 5. Yeah, because it's set up so perfectly for them. Like, you don't have to worry about quarterback. You don't have to worry about, you know, you're going to have a pretty good defense. You've recruited exceptionally well. It took Taggart a long time to get it going, but by the end, they were rolling. I mean, like, the talent's there. Like, they have more talent than anybody in the league, and that includes Houston, who has probably the best defensive player in college football.
Yeah, I mean, their only real challenge in the division right now is, I mean, really their friends down on I-4. I mean, who else is really going to challenge USF right now?
I mean, if Temple ever found an offense. But that's not going to happen this year.
Not even just like an offense, just like, just find a passing game, for God's sakes.
Yeah, like, they are so far and above. Like, if you looked at the league in terms of just pure top five teams, what, three, four of them are from the West?
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this league plays out, because it seems, I mean, of the two divisions, the East is definitely more settled. Like, there's already a hierarchy. We know what's going to be. The West is wide open.
Yeah, part of that is, like, I mean, you look at, like, the turnover this past season. I mean, most of the turnover came out of the East. I mean, UConn, Temple, USF, Cincinnati. ECU, maybe? Did ECU lose their coach? I can't remember.
Year before.
So, I mean, Houston, they lost their head coach. I mean, they basically installed a similar system in there. I mean, there's going to be obviously you're not going to find Tom Herman under a rock another time, but there's a lot more continuity on the West side. And it just is what it is. It's cyclical.
Yeah, and you got a lot, especially on the West. You have you got Tulsa, where they're going into the third year of a new coach. Chad Morris is finally going to stop being just interesting and maybe be good at SMU. Maybe he's going to take the Texas A&M job. Who knows? Because as it always happens, someone in the SEC West is getting fired because you can't go 6-6 and make $4 million a year. But that's not here, neither here nor there. Major Applewhite is a rising star in the coaching profession. I mean, you don't become offensive coordinator at Alabama in your early 30s if you're not sort of good at this. So, I mean, it's tough to tell what it's going to be in the West. I mean, if you went purely based on talent and continuity, it'd be Houston. But they were inconsistent last year, to put it nicely. And yeah, they have an overwhelming talent advantage, especially on the defensive line. But they also got routed by SMU.
Yeah, they still lost three times last season.
And they came up with two of the biggest wins of anybody.
Such a weird team. Like, I really don't know who you bank on in the West. It's like Memphis has had a lot of parts change, but like they seem like they're the more steady team right now. Like, if I had to vote, I don't know who I'd vote for to win that division. It's really...
Yeah, things I never thought I would say 10 years ago. Yeah, Memphis is definitely the more steady football program in that division.
Yeah, you definitely have to go for Memphis in that division. I mean, no matter how weird it sounds, it's 100% Memphis.
And they have their quarterback coming back, who was really good last year. That seems like where the biggest problem is in the West. Like, Greg Ward is gone. Evans at Tulsa is gone. Like, SMU, who knows who their quarterback is. Like, yeah, it's kind of a tough one. That seems like,
and we haven't even talked about the one team where it doesn't even matter who the players are. They're just going to be good. Hi, Navy.
Yeah, I mean, they just basically throw random guys into Ken Niumatalolo's offense, and it's just, yeah, eight wins every year. We'll just go ahead and count that.
And they've gone 7-1 both years, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, remember when people were saying, why the hell are we adding Navy? They're not that good.
Who said that?
No, you don't remember that sentiment? Oh, that was huge on the message boards when this was happening.
That was on our message boards.
Yeah, I mean, like, I go there for comedy.
Ah.
It's a good laugh. But you can't spend too much time there, because then it starts to, like, poison your mind.
Right.
In the brief history of the AAC, the only time a preseason favorite finished first was when UCF, Cincinnati, Memphis tied for first. Interesting.
I forgot Tuberville won a title.
What a shame. fair. Yeah. Let's not get crazy. Let's not get crazy.
Hey, given how it ended, a share is still amazing. It's like, what? That happened? That was life?
That's true.
I think it's because they lost to one of the co-champions by like 70 points at home, and so nobody remembers that game. Or that share title, except for the players that got rings. They definitely remember it.
It's all about the ring.
Yeah, so I guess before we close, we should talk about the new video board that UC is getting. On a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you for this new innovation to Nippert Stadium?
I'm 9 out of 10 if it comes with a new sound system.
It does not.
Only if. Ah, damn it. So 1.
Well, okay. It does, but it doesn't. Like, from what it sounds like, they're doing the video board first, and then phase 2, some random time down the road, is going to be coming where they get the new sound system and new ribbon boards, according to, I think, Chad Brendel at BCJ said that. So, how does that change anything for you, Matt?
The last two times I've gone to Nippert, I sat in the pavilion, not the new fancy pavilion, the old one where they put the poor people.
The layer?
It was deafening, not in a good way. Just, like, I had tinnitus already, so everyone around me knew how I felt. For 3 hours. I mean, I feel it all the time, because it never goes away, just that constant little ringing in my ear. It's so fun. But yeah, like, it was, that sound system is a relic of a bygone era, and it should be retired. And I'm glad that it is. I just, hoped it would be this year.
I guess I don't understand. I mean, I'm not an engineer or into computers or anything. How the hell hard is it to replace a sound system? Well, like, I'm just asking.
It's not difficult to buy new speakers. It is difficult to buy speakers that perform at the volumes intended for them to be played at.
You think that's something they could have addressed during the renovation, though?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, how much more of an effort from a financial standpoint and just installation standpoint could it have been putting it in with the new press box?
A couple million dollars.
Drop in the bucket?
Yeah. But, you know.
I mean, here's the thing. Is I get not putting in the scoreboard at the same time to a degree. But you've got all of your new electronics and lines running into that new press box. Couldn't you address the sound system throughout the entire stadium at the same time? Now it sounds like they almost have to, like, go back in and restructure it. Even though they could have done that when they were building the press box in the first place.
No, they put in new speakers on that side of the stadium. But on the other side, they left the old stuff. And, like, above the
old... Okay, to my point, now, to my other point, why wouldn't they just do it all at the same time?
I don't have a good answer for you. I'm just saying they didn't.
Damn it, Matt. Looking for a good answer.
Sometimes I don't have them.
You know, the real answer...
What are you here for if not for good answers?
The banter?
Ah.
Well, the real answer is so they can come back like a year or two later to get more of your money. Like, we need this new video board. Let's get some donations.
No, they're not the Bengals. They don't just raise taxes whenever the hell they feel like it to pay for random shit that Mike Brown wants. At least the Lindners are paying for all this stuff.
How generous of them. I mean, that's really their parting gift for whenever they move to their new stadium, if it's ever built.
Yeah, which is fine.
It's a hell of a gift.
I mean, it's okay. I don't know. I mean, a lot of people are pissed off about the whole soccer thing at Nippert, which I never understood. I mean, UC's come out way further ahead in that deal. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, just letting a soccer team play on their field for a few months in the summertime versus... renovating the walls, adding a new scoreboard, renovating the sound system down the road. I mean,
it's not even that stuff. Like, that stuff is great, don't get me wrong. The long-term benefits of this are far better because you got 20,000 people a game. How many of those people had never been to UC decades? And now they see what it is.
Yeah, and most of those people are like the folks in, I mean, I'm one of those folks now, but most of those people are the folks in like the northern suburbs who are taking their kids to soccer practice, you know, Saturday, or well, soccer games like Saturday mornings, and to your point, would never have been to Nippert. They would never go to a UC football game had FC Cincinnati not moved in. Like, it's expanding your potential customer base at a very basic level.
Oh, absolutely. And this is too late in the podcast to really get into this, but we've been talking for years about how there is such a perception gap between what UC actually is and what people who live in the outlying suburbs who don't spend time downtown or, you know, uptown at UC, who don't really know what it's become, who have no idea because they remember it. I mean, we all remember things as they were when we were first remembering shit. And that's the memory that sticks. It's not we're not really good as human beings. We're not great at filtering in new information to our perceptions. So just having this like huge group of people, you've probably had a million is probably pushing it, but 500,000 people who have been in that area, who have experienced it, and who have experienced something completely different from what they knew before. And that's going to linger, and that's going to stick, and that's going to have residual benefits for years down the road, long after SEC builds their own stadium and plays wherever it's going to end up being. And that's why the people who were bitching about the deal when it was signed are so short-sighted. It's just like, you're getting paid rent. You're getting people to your campus, which historically has been the toughest thing to do, because like they poured literally $1 billion into changing the campus and the infrastructure and all the surrounding area over decades. But there were so many people who would just be like, who refused to acknowledge that change happened because they remembered it as it was, not as it is. Now they don't really have an option anymore because they've been there 3-4 times for a soccer game. And that just changes the complexion of the perception that you see in that area forever. Maybe not forever, but for a prolonged period of time. Like, it's just, it's such a win-win, no-brainer for UC to do this. I mean, it's been awesome.
Yeah, Scott, what was your original question? Something about the scoreboard? We kind of deviated.
That was
we do what we do.
That's true. You did mention assorted bullshit in your list of topics, Matt, so I guess we accomplished that. Check that off
the
list.
Check that box. That is checked.
That is a much more interesting topic, though, the FC Cincinnati like phenomenon, especially with how popular it's become. And like getting like 30,000 people down to Nippert is never a bad thing. Especially like you guys said, if like 10 people go back for a football game, that's 10 more people than would have been there before.
Yeah, I mean, it's been fascinating to watch, and it'll be interesting to see what the long-term ramifications of this are going to be. But, like, I think this is a small part of changing the perception of UC in the Cincinnati area.
Well, I guess we'll see when they move the soccer season to the fall and they kick UC out of Nippert, the stadium.
Now you're just trolling.
Well, I mean, that one was too easy. Is there anything else you guys wanted to get to before we wrap this one up?
My end, not a whole lot. Really looking forward to seeing what the hell this team looks like at the end of camp. I have no real clue.
I'm just ready for football to be back.
I'll second that. Yeah. Like, I don't, like, this season, let's be honest, this season's going to be rough at times. Like, they're gonna claw their way to 6 or 7 wins if they even get there. But, I mean, it's like in Butch Jones's first year, which was a disaster. I mean, as long as they show the basic competency level of a solid team and can build off of that this season to bet bigger and better things in 2018 and 2019, I'll be happy to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I am really interested to see if this is a year, like, if this is going to be year one or if this is going to be year zero, the year where they tear everything right down and truly, like, take it down to the studs and start over, or if they can just kind of pivot from where they were and just go in a different direction. That's what I'm interested to see, but that's not something we're going to know till December.
Right.
It is good to go into season with some kind of optimism again and not have to talk yourself into it like last year.
Yeah. Did any of us talk ourselves into it? I mean, I did, because I'm somewhat optimistic. It's a shock to everyone in my family, but I am. At least about things not in my personal life.
I'm not optimistic. I'm just gullible. So I believed Tommy Tuberville whoever said it. Maybe it was me. Who said Zach Taylor was a competent offensive coordinator and just not some guy who happened to back his way into a role in Miami because there was some douchebag center who was making fun of other players and his coach had to get fired. So Zach Taylor fell into that role. But I have a different level of optimism this year just from what I'm seeing, the efforts that Fickell has put into place so far. It's not just some guy saying good things about one of his coaches or players. It's you can just kind of tell there's a different feel with this program now. And I can buy that. I can buy into that. There's a, I guess, swagger with the program that I've seen. Let's just say that. I'm going to close on that.
Man, it's been a long time since there was a real swagger with the program.
Yeah. It's been a minute.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as we wrap this up, it was good having you back, Chris. Congratulations with your baby, who's probably like 30 now. And,
yeah, it's getting there.
And we'll come back sometime in the future, maybe next week, maybe the week after. Like, depends what news breaks. But we'll be more consistent now that the season is close. So thanks for listening.